Our first speaker today is Barbara Alexander.
I go way back, and I go clear back to the YWCA when we met there, and then Pierce Park, and we didn't really have a landscape. We did, but it was just kind of whatever Vi Harms or someone did, you know, to the yard. It was pleasant, but it wasn't huge. And then all of a sudden, the church decided to move and buy a piece of property. And all of a sudden, we had 5 acres here, and we had a landscape. And it kind of occurred to us that maybe we needed a landscape committee. And so there was a sort of a committee formed, and I think Paul Schlobohm was the first chairman. And I know Mary was on it, I was on it, Mary McGowan was on it, Warren was on it. Maybe someone else I've left out. If I have, I'm sorry. I just and we began to think about what we wanted. And one of the things, we were kind of visionary, really, because that was almost, was more than 10 years ago, wasn't it? Our mission statement included using water thrifty plants or xeriscaping, whatever we could manage, but native plants if we could. But you know, low maintenance doesn't mean no maintenance. And so all of this has happened with volunteer labor. And at some point, the church actually had like a huge workshop where they polled everyone, including the children, and asked them what they'd like to see in land use out here, what they wanted to happen. And we tried very, very hard on that very first committee to include everything that everyone wanted. For example, the kids decided to keep the tiger pit. So we didn't fill it in. We kept the tiger pit because the kids wanted that. It's just the hole out in the grove. But anyway, we at some point, Mary realized that we needed professional help on this with a professional landscaper, and hired Don Belts to draw up our... This is the master plan right there on the board, isn't it? Yeah. And we have continued to get Don's help every time we build new wings on the building or or whatever. And it's been very helpful to us to have a direction. But the interesting thing for you might be to see where the future is, because there's quite a few things planned that have not happened yet, and we're going to need everyone's help to make those things happen. I have to look back now. I did write this out, but so the building proposal was approved by the congregation, and building began. Well, I guess a lot of you know this was a horse pasture before there was a building here. Maybe not, but it was. And it looked perfectly flat to me. But by the time they got the site prepared to start the building, there was a huge mountain of dirt in back. Now, I don't mean, you know, something that you just kind of walk over. I mean a pile of dirt that you could get up on and look down on the building. This was a huge pile of dirt. You wouldn't believe they scraped off that much dirt, but they did. And meanwhile, Jolene and Patrick Scow, a very far-sighted couple who saw the possibilities on the other side of the ditch, had decided to hire Topher Delaney, and I know Jolene will tell you about this. He was a nationally known landscape designer of healing gardens and children's gardens and so on. And the first time Topher came here and saw that mountain of dirt, she said, "Oh my gosh, you know how kids love to be on anything that's even 10 feet, 10 inches higher than anything else. A kid wants to be on top of it." She said, "We're going to build a mountain. We're going to move all that dirt and we're going to," and so they did. They took all that dirt and moved it from here over to there and built Jeremiah's garden, which Jolene will tell you about that. Anyway, but you all know how much we enjoy that. And so the first building was constructed, and it was just this building here. We didn't have the two wings. Our much anticipated first meeting was scheduled for Christmas Eve, 1997. But we were now under Garden City Planning and Zoning, and we discovered that we needed to have irrigation in place and plantings in place all around the front and the side of the church before they would give us an occupancy permit. So Mary put in the irrigation. I dug up stuff out of my yard, went to Edwards, went to Greenhurst, and they've always worked with us, They've always helped us out. We had a huge landscape party, and we somehow managed to get everything in and get our occupancy permit in time. And I will never forget the first meeting we had here. It was so wonderful. It was, it might have been muddy and it might not have been finished, but it was ours, and we had the wonderful candlelight service outside, and it was just so neat, and it was on Christmas Eve. It was just perfect. So what we didn't realize was that we were planting all those things on top of river rocks. There really isn't a whole lot of dirt out there. But stuff has grown. It's amazing. It's kind of like the faith is rubbing off or something, because everything seems to grow. It's not wonderful garden dirt out there, believe me. So I know sometimes you wonder why things sort of struggle out here to live, and part of the reason is that I know people often think, why don't we have huge trees planted out in the landscape and things like that, but there isn't any water out there. We only have water to a few parts here, so it's not as easy as saying, well, gee, what if we had a whole bunch of trees out there, because there isn't any water out there. And a lot of times we've had to dig up what we already had planted and move it. So you have to admire what's survived out here. The following spring, Warren built our wonderful patio out here in memory of his mother, Maud. And the Schwartzmans built the wonderful little bridge over the ditch so we could all have access to Jeremiah's garden. But Mary put the irrigation and the sod in the courtyard, the first courtyard. But golly gee, we had to dig all that up when we decided to build two wings on here. So all of a sudden, the landscape committee had to dig everything up and move it. And then Well, we had to dig it all up and move it again because a sewer line needed to go in. And it only sent one of us to the hospital. Sometimes we didn't have too much time to get these things done. So we had to dig them up and put them down. Or, am I done? I'm done. Okay. All right. Well.
But you know, I have a question to ask you, Barb. Why have you gone through all this?
Well, I know. You asked me. You said you wanted me to tell it.
Why has she stuck it out? Because you can hear all the things.
Well, you know, it's a chance to create something. It's a chance to meditate, be part of the earth, be part of nature, be part of a plan. I love it. Okay, I'm going to finish because I know my time's up. You know, there are so many people that have built so many things, from the children's playhouse to the Eagle Scout projects that gave us the horseshoe pit, the fire pit. There are so many things out here. Please excuse me if I've left some of you out because we didn't have time. But the point is, this whole thing has been created with volunteer labor and volunteer time and volunteer money. And if you, this is the fun committee to be on, really. And so I promise you, if you join this committee, you'll get more out of it than you put into it. But also, I just have to mention, now that we have the Bridge Event Center, this is a major fundraiser, and it's all because of this wonderful landscape out here. So this is another way, you know, if you couldn't give more money, you can give more time out in the landscape. So through Gopher Wars, snake grass wars, vandalism, and fires, we've tried to make this an inspirational place outside as well as in. So please come join us and have some fun.
And thank you, Barb, for there's all those years.
A million things I've left out, so.
There's no way you can do it in a short time. You can't. Thank you, Barb. Our next speaker is Jolene Scow.
Welcome, everyone. Thank you, Barb. Last week, my mother died at 81 years old. Excuse me. Thought I could do this. It was a very bittersweet time, since she had Alzheimer's disease and it was her time. Yet I lost my last parent, so the pain is there. But this is a strong reminder about why Patrick and I started and have pursued the development of Jeremiah's Adventure Garden, which we started in 1998. I'm okay. Just give me a moment. Just a deep breath. Okay. It began as, and continues and remains, a tangible legacy to our family. We want to honor our diversity, our diverse blended family, which we, by investing in a project that represents the belief that people need to grow and change the way gardens do, to appreciate diversity, which gardens represent, to have a vision for the future, which is necessary when a small sapling is planted. Gardens express our connectedness to the earth. We wanted a gift that lasted beyond Christmas and birthday gifts. When they're long forgotten, we wanted a reminder to our family of their impact on the earth, if even in a small way. We wanted to have a fun place that brought out the child in everyone. Our family tree is a hybrid with no genes in common or very few genes in common, but with five kids and seven grandkids, It represents how diversity is what Mother Nature is all about. Four of the five children were adopted by Patrick. He couldn't be here, by the way, today. And then I was lucky enough to inherit all of them. So when you add in my side of the family, that diversity is exemplified. Then fate presented the new Booth property as a place to build our vision. Happenstance provided a chance to work with Topher Delaney, the world-renowned architect that Barb mentioned. She's from San Francisco. And her creativity helped us turn this very weedy, and trust me, very weedy flat pasture into an ongoing project that it is today. Patrick was commenting after looking at my talk, he wanted to know how many loads of weeds and so forth we've hauled to the dump, and I'm thinking we could probably manage the whole compost area at the dump by ourselves. When it came to naming the garden, we had outside serendipitous guidance again, but it was in the form of a dream that I had. It was named Jeremiah's Adventure Garden, or JAG for short, after a guardian angel that Patrick and I had, Jeremiah the Bullfrog. So over the years, we have had an adventure building the various elements of the garden, and each has special meaning to us. But you may not realize what that is because we have no signs to express that yet. It's on the to-do list. But those elements include Twin Falls, the waterfall. Patrick was raised in Twin Falls and has strong roots there. And notice that we even use the term roots when talking about families, gardening term. There's Frog Court, which is the area at the top of the crabapple trees, or which is Crabapple Lane, a place for romping or just looking around and honoring all creatures, great and small. There is Dream Hill, where you can lay back in the grass and watch the clouds or dream or listen to a story or hunt lions and tigers. In the butterfly forest, we planted 16 different varieties of butterfly bush, ranging from white to deep purple, to show that nature doesn't prefer one color over another within the same family. The briar patch along Chelan teaches that nature isn't always soft and nice. There are thorns and spikes to deal with, and yet at the same time it's home to small birds and animals that protect them. There is beauty within the thorns. The maze. This is a fun place made up of privets. Harry Potter lived on Privet Drive. And if you look at it above, as if you were a bird, you can figure out that it spells Jeremiah. Have you gone through the tunnel at the end? There's a mulberry tree for dancing around. There's a grandmother tree bridge for crossing over into the grove forest. There are ponderosa pines around representing the forests in which I spent my youth in Washington State. And every year we have planted the pumpkin patch and enjoy that harvest. We've just added the medicine circle, or it's in the process if the weather would cooperate. And that's a place of contemplation and learning, of acknowledging the four directions and what they represent. There are many other elements either completed, in process, or planned, with the hope that they provide grand additions to Jeremiah, to Booth, to Boise, and to the future. More information will be shared via the newsletter as time allows, and so that you can be a part of the experience. We hope you and your family will share our adventure in JAG. Have fun, explore, learn, grow. Do so knowing, I'm sorry, that has lovingly been given by our family to all future families, whatever their definition or makeup.
Jolene, thank you. We're so grateful that she was able to be here because it was so fresh. And last week she spent with her mother and family. So we appreciate so much you being here for our family. The next speaker is John Jacobson.
Good morning. From the time I was a small child living in the Wind River Mountains in Wyoming, being out in nature has been essential to my well-being. When I was 13, my family moved to Salt Lake City, which is situated at the base of the Wasatch Mountains, some of the nicest hiking you could ever ask for. And as a young man, I discovered the wonders of camping in the Red Rock Deserts of southern Utah. If anybody's been there, you know what I'm talking about. In my early 20s, I started working as a service technician for the natural gas utility, which took me daily to people's homes, and some of whom had natural gardens, just wonderful gardens. And I began to realize how a person could create their own natural retreat through gardening. While I did not give up hiking or camping, in my early 40s, I began to garden, and it became a passion, trying to create my own spiritual space right at home. For me, gardening is like therapy. It allows me to spend time in the present moment and frees my mind of many other thoughts and worries. Even weeding, believe it or not, if done in the right frame of mind, can be a spiritual experience. If you don't worry about how many weeds you need to pull and just take them one at a time, it can be an opportunity to quiet your mind. We have all heard the expression about sitting and watching the grass grow. Well, when you're out in your garden every day, you literally watch your plants grow. The absolute pleasure I get from watching a plant develop from a seed to a mature plant is reward in itself. Quite a few years ago, when we were living in Salt Lake City, I had a vision of taking out most of our lawn and replacing it with drought-tolerant plants so we could use less water. I had a catalog from a nursery in New Mexico called High Country Gardens, and I could see that it would be possible to create a colorful, showy garden with all these drought-tolerant plants. Well, my heart was in the right place, but my enthusiasm overrode common sense. I was so eager to bring my dream to life that I ordered 350 plants, all with the same shipping date. Yeah. So when they arrived, I quickly realized I was in over my head, as these plants needed to be put in the ground right away. Well, thank God for my wonderful next-door neighbor who jumped right in to help me. We were still planting in the dark, but we kept at it until we were finished. I would like to say this had a happy ending, but the maintenance was as overwhelming as the planting had been. Between deadheading flowers, insect issues, weeds, and in my case, just plain lack of knowledge, I lost about half of those plants. This gardening experience taught me a lot about letting go of my attachment to the outcome. Like so many other things in life, despite our best efforts, we have little control over the outcome, and we have to know when to just let it go. I'm still learning that. But now, many years later, I am much better at putting experience in perspective. While the spiritual aspect of gardening is still very much a part of me, loss is part of the package too. Choosing between beloved pets and gardens can be a very real challenge as well. In my opinion, both can be a spiritually challenging endeavor. And my dog Sonny tries to water the garden in his own way, anytime, anywhere. So I have to put up fencing around the garden to protect it from him. Unfortunately, this interferes with my desire for a backyard that is natural and spiritually satisfying. So here's another opportunity to practice letting go. Obviously, the dog stays, though. Yeah. So gardening provides a connection to the earth that can be profound and satisfying, an opportunity to practice gratitude and humility. We are all very much a part of this earth. It's all we have. If this is our home, let's do our best to protect it so future generations can experience the awesome beauty and spirituality of nature. Thank you.
Alan Schwartzman is our next speaker.
Is there a Fritz or Constant Frederick here? As Mary escorts this landscaping treasure or relic up to the podium, I want to give you a little background before reading his poem. Mary assumed the chairmanship of the Landscape Committee in 1999, and since that time has been referred to by most, and always by me, as she who must be obeyed. One of her first jobs was to recruit two mowers, or as she said, from Booth's, brightest and best. After a thorough vetting process, which included a Minnesota multiphasic personality inventory and felony background checks, Costin and I were chosen, primarily because we were the only two volunteers. At that time, we had only a walk-behind mower. But Mary, ever vigilant, saw across the street that a neighbor had for sale an old Alice Chalmers riding mower. We call her Little Alice. Costin and I took over 2 months of in-servicing before we figured out how to use it. And no one in Boise, by the way, could service this machine. It had to go to Nampa. It had a mind of its own. Costin and I have been mowers since that time, and every time we pass, we always tipped our hat. Costin has now reached emeritus status, and Mary, she who must be obeyed, thought it appropriate to give him a fine send-off and acknowledgement. Now, knowing his love for the English language, and as a veteran wordsmith, I have cast this tribute as a Shakespearean oration. You may find some of the themes, the meter, the metrics, the rhythms familiar, which only goes to show, Costin, that I am an equal opportunity plagiarist. For your glossary, there are two Latin phrases, Gaudium et Sigitur, which means therefore let us rejoice, and Deus ex machina, literally meaning God from a machine. It's an old operatic or literary device where the author would send down Jupiter or Zeus to save the situation, pluck the hero up into an area of safety, and so everything would end happily ever after. I have one Yiddish word, verklempt, which will appear. It means full of emotion, bursting to the point where you cannot speak. I have entitled this Farewell Tribute to Costin in iambic pentameter, no less. Friends, Boiseans, fellow boofers, lend me your ears. I come to praise Costin, not to retire him. The good that he has done lies all about us in the landscape, for Costin is an honorable mower. He has been my friend, faithful and just to me, and personal ambitions did he forsake. Thrice, the fair Mary has presented him the mantle of chief number one mower, and thrice did the noble Costin refuse. If this be ambition, then surely it needs be made of sterner stuff. We do hold Costin in high esteem, and so should it be. Neither rain, nor hail, nor sleet, nor gloom of cottonwood debris has stayed this faithful mower from the swift completion of his appointed rounds. With eyes a twinkle and tip of cap, he hath performed and held the course, save for a glitch or two or three. Time was when he mowed with deck raised high, that steel blade ne'er touched one blade of grass. To which, when pointed out, he, with noble visage, intoned, "This is indeed the unkindest non-cut of all." And early on, aloft upon decrepit little Alice Chalmers, salvaged for a pittance by the fair Mary, did our Causton, trammeled but unbowed, with broken axle, revolve in endless circles and figure eights, uncontrolled, until rescued with merry mirth and pungent smiles. For Causton is an honorable mower. Unlike his craven counterparts, he hath repaired to yonder restroom to there relieve himself, eschewing relief behind nearest flowering bush or upon some nasty gopher mound. He and John Deere hath merged as one with natural habitat and transformed this, our landscape, to green sanctuary, free, I might add, from nuclear pollution. Causton leaves to us cleared pathways, trimmed grounds, verdant pastures, private nooks, grassy knolls, and sunny swales, all for our common pleasures, to walk abroad and recreate ourselves. If this be not enough, remember how he hath removed recalcitrant stump with zen-like focus and words of wisdom. A stump by any other name still is a stump. Bear with me, please. Talk amongst yourselves. I'm a little verklempt. Here is our Causton. From where comes such another? Shall we see his likes again? Whence shall we mow again, Causton? I know not. Therefore, our fondest farewell we take. Forever and forever fare thee well, dear Causton. If we do mow again on Johnny Deere, why, we shall smile and tip our hats. If not, why, this parting is well made. Epilogue, sit down. Sit down. Epilogue, it's not over. How do we remember and repay thee? What fitting tribute, what small token of our esteem, what trinket, bijou, lagniappe, can we bestow? Alas, the board in dire straits, with budget fixed and money's tight, no fair financial recompense in sight, but to the rescue, as deus ex machina, from the sky, the Pulley Family Trust responds and brings forth reply. Hats off! Hats off! One and all, Gaudiamus Igitur, we call, and here to explain more fully, I summon forth our own Bill Pulley.
I told Alan earlier, there's an old vaudeville axiom. Never, ever, ever follow a banjo act. Constant, because of you, I have achieved lofty status in Booth. I have been promoted to Mower Apprentice First Class. And as a token from this fellowship, we are presenting you the keys to your very own John Deere. Knowing full well that you and Judy in a few years will be moving into a condominium and we'll have great need for that. But in the theme of downsizing, we downsized for John Deere.